Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 1st of April, April Fool's Day. It's Thursday class, the year 2021. We will continue from the sharing on this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, Teachings from the Adapter Verses of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wu Liang Yi Jing. We are at page 172. Just relax body and mind and maintain some form of silent within to develop the meditation. So as usual, we will off the light and we will have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. This style of meditation is very good. The awareness-based meditation, you know how to do it. You just have to relax body and mind. Completely relax and silent everything. Then just maintain awareness for as long as you can. No need to do anything. That itself is meditation. So all of meditation is to develop the ability to silence your mind, relax body and mind, so that you can realize the inner peace, the inner awareness within. So if you can do it, your mind will be very calm, very peaceful. So the benefits of meditation are a lot. You develop inner peace, inner calmness. Then there is inner well-being. It will help you recuperate, allow you to rest your body and mind. So these are the benefits that a cultivator or a meditator who know how to develop awareness-based meditation will receive. And because you know how to relax, maintain awareness, develop the inner peace and inner calmness, there is also inner well-being that comes with it. Then you will recuperate and you have rested very long. Then on top of that, there is clarity. You can see things clearly. You can understand things clearly. And the inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness, and inner well-being with the clarity can enable you to see things clearly, make better decisions. Then on top of that, you can also be more efficient in your study, in your work. Then of course, the last benefit is you can develop understanding, wisdom that can free your mind, liberate your mind, bring about enlightenment. So there are a lot of very useful benefits or advantages of learning this type of meditation. So awareness-based meditation is very useful. So remember, relax body and mind, maintain awareness for as long as you can, and use that silent mind within to develop understanding or meditation. You can silence your mind completely without allowing it to become heedless or think. Then it will settle down. The mind, when it settles down, it becomes more and more calm, more and more peaceful. It's just awareness. It can be aware of anything. If you are familiar with awareness of the breathing, in and out breathing, you can anchor that. Or otherwise, just relax and maintain awareness of whatever that arises. You can also stay at the heart area where you can be mindful or aware of your heartbeat or any vibration within your body. Wherever you can locate your awareness. Just stay there. Maintain awareness there. Then this awareness will develop, become more and more stable. So when your thinking ceases, you will realize your true mind, the silent mind. Then inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness become very clear, very easy. That's how the benefits of meditation comes in. You will have inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness, and inner well-being. The tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silence of mind, you will be able to develop them. The awareness of it is so beautiful. Without thought, you are most peaceful, most calm. You have clarity, you recuperate. You will develop a lot of inner peace, inner well-being, and inner awareness. Then the inner well-being, together with the clarity and stability of awareness, the awareness nature is your true mind, your silent mind. Realize that, stay with that, and you will progress. You will understand many things. So I'll read to you the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning first. Having awakened to supreme perfect enlightenment, in order to enable people of any capacity to understand, the Buddha, Sammasambuddha, expounded the teachings of the Four Noble Truths. Understanding suffering, knowing the cause of arising of suffering, seeking the cessation of suffering, and finally realizing the path to the cessation of suffering are possible because we respectfully rely on the teachings of the Noble One. So that is the new section. When the Buddha attained enlightenment, there is another part, two more sentences. We demonstrated compassion and manifest wisdom in response to the Buddha's call to save the world. Then I will go in to the commentaries. When the Buddha attained enlightenment and realized the truth of all things in the universe, his state of mind was as spacious and open as the sky, without a single hindrance. So that indicates the enlightened state of the Buddha, the oneness nature. The mind is that true nature, completely free, nothing inside there. This brought him such joy that he wanted to pass on this realization of unsurpassed universal perfect enlightenment to all sentient beings. He wanted to verify this principle for all to understand. But because this principle was so wondrous and people's capacity varied so widely, they could not accept them. So there was the problem. Therefore, the Buddha had to apply his wisdom to enable people of any capacity to understand. So this is not easy. He did so by giving teachings according to the people's capabilities, starting with expounding the Four Noble Truths, the truth of the existence of suffering, or we call prevalence of suffering, then the truth of the cause of arising of suffering, then the Noble Truth of cessation of suffering, and the final truth is the truth, Noble Truth on the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. In our daily life, we are able to experience the truth that life is full of suffering, is to experience the Noble Truth, the first Noble Truth, of dukkha, or what the Buddha meant is the reality of life and existence. If you go through life long enough, you will confront these eight realities of life and existence. So these realities are common to all humanity or living beings, because they are called reality. So when you confront them without wisdom, suffering will be the result or the outcome. So that is the first noble truth. So through understanding suffering and knowing the cause, in our daily living, we are able to experience the truth that life is full of suffering. And this one we have gone through. Then through understanding suffering and knowing the cause always arising, we can understand that suffering in life comes from karmic effect and retribution brought about by the accumulation of various karmic causes and conditions. So the cause of arising of suffering is mainly karmic. So this karmic conditioning or effect and retribution brought about by accumulation of the various karmic causes and conditions from the distant past until now, they have the power to actually condition us into suffering and misery. Since we are aware that suffering is actually the karmic retribution resulting from the accumulation of various karmic causes and conditions, how can we escape this suffering? So the inquiry is, how can we escape this suffering? The Buddha teaches that we must first put an end to the causes and conditions that we have already created, so we will no longer give rise to ignorance and create negativity or karma. So the negative causes and conditions we have created may have already led to negative karmic effect. We have to learn to willingly face the negativity of karmic that has already manifested in order to avoid creating additional negative karma. Thus, though we may endure suffering in this life, our heart will remain open and free of hindrance, because we understand that we are the one who created the karmic causes and conditions that have led to this suffering. This is how we seek the cessation of suffering. Once we pursue this goal, we will naturally realize the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. Our mind can connect with this path because we respectfully rely on the teachings of the Noble Ones. So this is the author's way of presenting the Four Noble Truths. But we can develop our own understanding too, apart from that. Because as we all have gone through, the essence of the Buddha's teaching is actually this Four Noble Truths. And the reason why the Buddha called it Noble Truth is because these are truths that can transform us and make us noble ones. And noble ones during the time of the Buddha are called enlightened ones. Enlightened ones are living beings or human beings that have the wisdom to live life, to understand life. And they are very noble in all aspects of life. That's why they are called Noble One. They are very noble in their approach to life, in the way they understand life, which means they are very noble in the wisdom aspect. They have noble understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence. they have right view, right understanding of the way things are. That's why they are very noble in that sense. They have noble understanding. And because of that, they know how to live life. Then they also become very noble in the way they conduct themselves, in the way they arise their thought process, in the way they actually communicate with people, communicate and interact with people. So all this understanding are very important. That's why we call it noble truth. When you understand, can make you noble ones. So the essence of the Buddha's teaching are this four noble truth, and like what the author has gone through. First, there is a first noble truth of dukkha, or what is commonly translated as suffering, or misery, or unsatisfactory state of mind. So this noble truth of dukkha, the Buddha explained under his Four Noble Truth teaching in a very beautiful way. The Buddha proclaimed this noble truth. He said, there are eight realities of life and existence. If you live life long enough, you will confront them. And when you confront them without wisdom or without his teaching, suffering will be the result. So that is the reason why the world is full of suffering, prevalence of suffering. So what are the eight conditions? The Buddha say birth, old age, sickness and death, these four realities, they are very, very powerful. When you confront them without wisdom, you will suffer. You will become afflicted, miserable. So these four are very common reality. Every living being has to confront them. We have to confront birth. Wherever there is birth, there is old age, sickness and death. And all these are very traumatic realities when you do not have the understanding. It can bring about a lot of suffering, misery, traumatic experiences. Of course, there is also the happy moments, birth of a newborn baby or a child. A lot of people look forward to birth because they have this happy moments where they believe they are going to become the parents. They are going to become adult and they are going to have their own children. Then they also look forward to having beautiful children where they can actually nurture them and bring them up and have a beautiful family. But not every birth is perfect or ideal in the sense that there may be a complication that comes along. So when there is complication, birth may not be a joyful occasion. So there were many incidents of birth which leads to misery, suffering, sorrow and lamentation. Because when there is complication, probability of death can happen. Disease, sickness, defective birth can actually arise. So all this are reality that can affect human suffering, that can bring about human suffering and misery. Then of course, after birth, we will have to go through the phases of life. We will have to go through the growth phase. That's why it leads to old age, then in between there will be sickness, disease, injury, etc. And ultimately, the final reality is death. Death is a reality. So death of a loved one, death of somebody very close to us, can be very traumatic when we don't have the Dhamma, the understanding, the wisdom. Then disease, as we age, many things happen. It can lead to complications, suffering, deterioration of our senses, our health, then pending death. So nowadays, a lot of diseases are very traumatic, very serious type. Then going through old age is also not easy for those who have experienced them or have witnessed their parent and their grandparent going through old age. Nowadays, maybe our society is more modern. We can witness through watching show, cinema, videos, and all those things. Nowadays, we got private channel on Netflix and all this thing. Then you can also Google and read about it. So this first four reality, birth, old age, sickness, and death, is already something not easy for humanity to actually confront. So the Buddha's noble truth, the first noble truth reality, is really, really beautiful. Yeah. At least we have to come to terms with this reality. If we understand this truth, then we know what suffering is. Then when we know the cause of its arising, at least we are in a better position to mitigate suffering, to understand life, and to develop the wisdom to mitigate suffering and to go through life in a beautiful and meaningful way. The other four is separation from loved ones or our prized possession. When there is separation, there is always suffering or misery, unless you have the wisdom. And the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like. That one is quite easy to understand. It will condition suffering unless you have the Dhamma. Then number seven is very common, happen to a lot of people every now and then. When things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want in life, when your expectation in life are not met, you become unhappy, miserable, afflicted. Then the final summary is the best. The Buddha said, in short, all these first seven realities, they arise because of our delusion, sakayadity, self-delusion, that condition us to grasp and cling onto these five aggregates of form and mind, thereby triggering of suffering. So the five aggregates of grasping, clinging, and attachment is dukkha. And this final summary is very important. So to understand that, we have to understand the five aggregates of form and mind. So the Buddha taught us very clearly, as a human being or as a living being, we have a human form, a physical form. Then we have a mind. The mind is subdivided into four more aggregates. The mind can feel, there's an aggregate of feeling. The mind can perceive, there's an aggregate of perception. And the mind can arise mental states, think, mental activity, emotion, and all those things. So all this is the quality of mind. So that the Buddha called Sankara. Sankara is whatever that your mind can do, including your feeling and perception, means the whole content of consciousness, is called Sankara. Then finally, our mind can become conscious. Consciousness is the last aggregate. The mind can be conscious of what we see because we have the senses. What we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So these four aggregates, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana, or feeling, perception, activity of mind, mental states, and consciousness, four plus the physical body become the five aggregates of form and mind. So this is the first aspect as a human being or as a living being. Then there is a second aspect which is at the mind level. At the mind level, as we all know, we have four aggregates of mind. Feeling, perception, activity of mind, and consciousness. Then how does the form enter the mind? It's through our aggregate of perception. That's why this sanya perception aggregate is very important, very powerful. When you want to develop good meditation, you need to have the ability to observe this, mindful of perception. So whatever you come to perceive is the external form that you bring into the mind. So perception of form is consciousness because you become conscious of what you perceive. So this external form, when it enters the mind, it becomes the fifth aggregate. So every moment of sense experience, we also have the five aggregates of form and mind. And this is the second aspect, the mental aspect, where the form is the external form, not the physical body. Yeah. And this second aspect is very important. The Buddha taught the Paticchasamuppada, or the 12 links. He said, if you want to understand how you function as a human being, how your mind operates, you have to understand this teaching, the Paticchasamuppada, the 12 links, how thought process come to be. Dependent on the first link of avijja, ignorance, it conditions mental activity. So avijja paccaya sankhara, and sankhara paccaya vijnana. Vijnanam paccaya namarupa, then namarupa paccaya salayatana. Salayatana are the sense bases. Then dependent on sense bases, it conditions contact. Then contact condition feeling, feeling condition craving. This is how our mind functions. It need not be in a single dimensional sequence. Sometimes it's not linear, it can be multidimensional. Unless you have mindfulness, you can't see, you can't understand. So this first noble truth reality, the one I explained to you, is the complete one. It's the more comprehensive one. It's understanding the five aggregates of form and mind. The two aspects. Namarupa. Then under the second noble truth, the Buddha said, there is the second noble truth of dukkha, which explained to us clearly the cause of its arising. How did dukkha comes to be? It comes about because of craving, born of sakkayaditti, delusion. So when we are deluded, we believe this five aggregate of form and mind is real, is what we are. That's why we grasp at it, we cling on to it. We think this body exists, this body is real, this is what we are. That's why when we attach and cling to this body, what happens? We all worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. Whenever this body is subject to old age, sickness and death, or injury or whatever, there is suffering, there is fear, there is worry, there is anxiety. So this is what attachment is all about. Not having the wisdom to realize clearly that the physical body doesn't belong to us. It goes the way of nature. Yeah, it makes a whole element, the four elements, without any knowing how can it be you. So finally, when we meditate, we develop the understanding, then we can go above and liberate our mind and free. So the second noble truth is very important. The cause of arising or suffering is true self-delusion that conditions us to cling to grasps. That's how craving arises. Craving is attachment, clinging, grasping. We cling to this physical body, the first or the five aggregate. Then we cling to all the feeling, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, the duality. We react to them, either pleasant or unpleasant, leads to suffering. Because whatever feeling is, if it's a pleasant feeling, it will change and finally become unpleasant. So whatever pleasant feeling, if you attach and cling and want it to remain forever, you will suffer because it will change. It will revert back to unpleasant because of your craving, your desire. You want the good moments. You want your body to be forever young, don't get old, don't get sick and die. This is not possible. Because within the conditioned world, it has its own reality. That feeling come and go. Feeling is dependent originating, depend on your mind state, depend on how you perceive that sensation of feeling. You attach to good feeling and reject negative or unpleasant feeling, then you create your own misery, your own what they call suffering. That's the reason why under the teaching, you often hear this. Every sensation or craving, or feeling leads to craving. Craving can be positive or negative. It will always end up in suffering. So whatever sense experience, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, is a prelude to suffering, to misery, because of our attachment, our craving. The way we perceive things through delusion. So without that delusion, we need not attach and cling. We can accept the reality of the moment and just experience those feelings or sensations. Then feeling can become pure feeling. It need not be conditioned into craving. Without attachment, without craving, there is no suffering. Like good food, you can have them. But you attach to good food, you will become miserable when you cannot get what you want, when condition is no more, when condition cease to be. The reality of life is not for you to predict or forever want it that way. Because we live in a conditioned world, existential world. Everything is dependent originating. Condition like that, things be like that, everything evolve and change. And conditions is to be, every phenomenon is to be, every sense experience was is to be. That's why you oscillate from pleasant to unpleasant feeling if you attach. But if you have the wisdom, you will understand, then you will not allow all this to happen. Then after that, the Buddha said, after we have understood the noble truth of dukkha, of suffering, and the cause of its arising, then we can mitigate it. We can actually manage our life better. But when you know what is suffering, the eight condition, and the cause behind, surely you can mitigate it. Isn't it? You will not be so foolish as to continue to allow this delusion to torment you and make you miserable. Yeah. So if you develop the wisdom and the understanding to mitigate it, to overcome it, to go above it or liberate your mind from that delusion, then you can realize the third noble truth. The third noble truth, the Buddha said, suffering need not be. There is a noble truth that explained to us clearly that suffering can cease. Cessation of dukkha leading to enlightenment in the here and the now, nibbana, can be realized. That is the most beautiful teaching. So when you know suffering may not be, enlightenment in the here and the now is possible, then there is this understanding to move on, to develop the cultivation, to strive on with heedfulness, to develop the wisdom, to liberate our mind, to develop the understanding of life, then to live life accordingly. So that we can experience all of the wonders and beauties of life, so that life can become meaningful. Then finally, of course, the Buddha didn't end there. He said there is still one more noble truth, the fourth noble truth. He not only tell you that enlightenment is possible, he even taught you how to realize this enlightenment. So the fourth noble truth is basically teaching you the path that leads to the end of all suffering. So under the fourth noble truth, the Buddha taught the noble eightfold path. He said, if living beings were to cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So basically, noble eightfold path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So if you cultivate this noble eightfold path, all of your suffering or misery or problem, so-called problem in inverted comma, will be resolved. So this is how we apply the teaching, noble eightfold path, to live life. If we act according to wisdom, following noble eightfold path, all our so-called worldly problems or misery and suffering can be resolved amicably. So this is the beauty of his teaching. So this way I find that the four noble truth is clearer than living being can understand. Then not only that, the Buddha also explained further, he said, he himself as a Sammasambuddha before his enlightenment, he need to cultivate his four noble truth in his three turning. So four truth, three turning, leading to 12 modes. He has to understand this four noble truth in his three turning or 12 modes in order for him to really call himself the fully enlightened one. So this three turning is very important. The three turning actually correspond to the three type of wisdom. In Pali, the Buddha called it Suttamaya Panya, born of first turning. Then second turning wisdom is Chintamaya Panya. Then third turning wisdom is Bhavana Maya Panya. Suttamaya Panya is wisdom born of hearing the sutta. During the time of the Buddha, you can only listen to his teaching where there was no recording, no textbook, no written books and all those things. So listening was the only way. So nowadays, you can read about it, you can Google, you can even study. So first turning has become much more approachable. You can even listen to a recording. Last time during the time of the Buddha, you miss his sharing. You have to wait for Ananda to repeat. Otherwise, you cannot have the opportunity to hear it again. So, first turning Buddha wisdom born of hearing the sutta is more difficult to develop. Unless you have your past cultivation, you have cultivated before. Your past karmic nature and spiritual nature are very strong, very firmly established. Then the moment you hear truth, you awaken. Like Kundanya, Sariputta, who heard from Asaji. So all this are taught by the Buddha. Then after that, the Buddha said, after you have heard his discourse, his teaching, if you are still not enlightened, then you can develop the second turning, is it? You should reflect, contemplate, and inquire into it to stabilize your understanding so that you can assimilate them into your nature so that it can become a more stable understanding. So when you do that, the Buddha called that wisdom that arises as Cintamaya Panya, wisdom born of contemplation, constant listening to the Dhamma and contemplate into it, reflect and inquire deep into it. Means you really study, contemplate, reflect, then stabilize the understanding. Then you are ready to receive truth. So first and second turning wisdom is the initial wisdom that will support you to enable you to awaken under the third turning. So third turning is called Bhavana Maya Panya. Bhavana is the meditative training or discipline. So wisdom born of meditation is the third turning wisdom. At that one, you need to silence your mind, develop mindfulness, and awaken. So this third turning, if you have the first and second turning wisdom to support you, then the third turning is pretty easy. It can happen anytime. Sometimes while you are doing the meditation, you can hear something like first turning, it comes, the truth. You can awaken, it can trigger. Then sometimes while reflecting, contemplating, when you are silent, you can just awaken. So there were many occasions during the time of the Buddha. Even the bhikkhunis also, they awaken this way. So this is how wonderful the teaching is. So bear in mind, this Theravada training of the essential Dhamma of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths and its three turning, these are more complete and more easy to develop as understanding because they are closely related to the three type of wisdom. The Mahayana also had the three turning, but it's not so clearly explained because the Four Noble Truths actually, the teaching is very deep. So if you don't have an in-depth understanding, it's not easy to penetrate his teaching. So with this, I hope it can benefit you all. So I will go back to the notes. The Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths one by one, explaining the existence of suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path that lead to the cessation of suffering. So this I have covered. He proclaimed these true principles of the world, helping everyone to understand the origin of suffering and guiding everyone to the path of liberation. Hence, sentient beings all rely on the Buddha's noble path, virtue and wisdom. So this aspect is true because without the Buddha's teaching on the Noble Path, without the Buddha's virtue and wisdom, it's not easy. That's why without sasana, it's extremely difficult to cultivate. Almost near to impossible. Only a very handful who are very special or diligent can do it. Because of his virtue, the Buddha is able to manifest here on this conditioned world or Saha world to save sentient beings, to save the world. Then we act in response. This is how Buddha and sentient beings respond to each other. The Buddha comes to the world to teach, sentient beings follow and cultivate the teaching accordingly. Thus, demonstrate compassion and manifest wisdom in response to the Buddha's call to save the world. So this is the author's way of explaining. With compassion, we can create blessings. Very true. One often say that a blessing is the joy we gain from giving. Yeah, very true. When we give, we have generosity. There is this joy. When you see how your generosity has helped actually people overcome their suffering and misery, there's a lot of joy. There's a lot of contentment and understanding. That's why you see the beauty of this virtue, generosity. There are so many people who, because of their compassion, devote themselves to benefiting others and are thus able to overcome the difficulties of old age, sickness, and death. Therefore, they do everything very joyfully. In Suci, we often see such noble role models. For instance, there are elderly people who have overcome the challenges of impaired physical mobility, or people who, in spite of being in difficult financial situations, still use their time to help others. On Ta'ai TV program, we can see many such people sharing their life story and experiences. So these are very meaningful, very beautiful. As for wisdom, I often say wisdom is the freedom we gain through understanding. And this is very true. Without wisdom, without understanding, you cannot be free from suffering. You will have problem. Wisdom means clearly understanding all Dhamma. This is also the correct definition. But the more precise one is wisdom means having right view, right understanding of all the nature's law that governs all of life and existence. Is when we understand truth, we understand reality, there is wisdom. Able to comprehend everything clearly, following nature's law. There are people we consider the rich among the rich. They are those who have absorbed the Buddha Dharma and unlocked their wisdom. And thus, they devote themselves to walking the Bodhisattva path in the world. Moreover, they do so with such freedom and ease. All around us, we also see many people who, although they face great adversity, are not only able to learn to overcome their difficulties, but also go a step beyond that to help others. So these are true cultivator and bodhisattva. The world is a bodhisattva training ground. Very, very true. Absolutely true. And every situation we encounter allow us to engage in spiritual cultivation. So bear this in mind. This sentence is very important. If you want to go the bodhisattva way, you want to be a true Dhamma practitioner and cultivator, you must understand this. I read again. Listen. This world is a bodhisattva training ground. A training ground for those who cultivate the bodhisattva way. And every situation in life you encounter allow us to engage in spiritual cultivation. This is retro. You cannot do that means your cultivation is still not up to the mark. When we aspire to walk this bodhisattva way or path, every place becomes our spiritual training ground. For example, one year the Tzuchi chapter in Jordan carried out a 2-month-long large-scale AIDS distribution in celebration of its anniversary. One of the distribution was for the Bidoing in Mafraq. a desert region in the north of Jordan. This was a 90-kilometer two-hour drive from the city of capital city of Amman. One of the participants in the aid distribution was Prince Hassan of Jordan. He is the uncle of the reigning king of Jordan, and he enjoyed a high status in the royal family. Through his longtime bodyguard, Mr. Chen Qihua, he has formed a connection with Cixi. Mr. Chen often told the prince about Cixi's activities, and this inspired the prince to care for the poor and suffering, and to also become a member of Cixi. This is something very wholesome. On several occasions, when Cixi was conducting international disaster relief, the prince put his support behind Mr. Chen's effort. Also, because he was moved by the spirit of Cixi, he often participated in emergency aid distribution. Thus, his sense of compassion was repeatedly awakened. Through his compassion for others, he developed the wisdom to see that all people are equal. He understood that though he was born a royal prince, he is the same as everyone else. Therefore, at aid distribution, he went among the impoverished people as one of them. He doted on all the children like a grandfather, and he gave of himself with love, just as all Cixi volunteers do. When Prince Hassan came to Mafraq with the Cixi volunteer, he wanted to help in moving the supply, but Mr. Chen was worried about his advanced age. And so he earnestly asked him, "Can you please give candy to the children instead?" The prince happily replied, "Sure, I want to help in any way I can," and then distributed the candy to the children. After he had given it all away, he again wanted to help move the supply. Mr. Chen then asked him to do something else. "Please help open up the packages, sort the supply by type, and then package them for each household." The prince did this very happily too. Mr. Chen has inspired and guided many local residents to become Cixi volunteers as well. During the aid distribution, a Jordanian Cixi commissioner would tell the Bedouin about the origin of Cixi and the spirit behind the bamboo banks. Having received the care and love of Cixi volunteers over the years, the local people took the words of the volunteers into their heart. They understood that what they received from Cixi came from the love and care of many people. And they further understood that small amount of money could enable an act of great love. Thus, even though they themselves were impoverished, they still willingly donated what they could to Cixi to help others in need. There is also an 84-year-old Cixi volunteer in Jordan who has a deep connection with Cixi. She used to live in Australia. Because she had been ill, she had difficulty supporting herself. So Cixi volunteer in Australia helped care for her. Her daughter Lily only found out that her mother was under the care of Cixi volunteer when she went to Australia to visit her. She later brought her mother back to Jordan, and both mother and daughter devoted themselves to volunteering with Cixi. When Mr. Chen told Prince Hassan about them, the prince praised the great love of Cixi volunteers for not discriminating between people of different ethnic cities. He would tell whomever he met about Cixi, and also happily shared stories of Cixi's work with everybody in the palace. Through his connection with Cixi, Prince Hassan was able to nurture his loving kindness and compassion and develop the wisdom to view everyone in the same way. Whether people are poor or wealthy or of high status or low status, the prince would work with them all. A life lived with such egalitarian view is truly beautiful to behold. The human mind is where Bodhisattva can engage in spiritual practice and cultivate compassion and wisdom. This is very true. So this world is our spiritual training ground. This is where we can truly recognize and experience suffering. And it is only amidst suffering that we can realize the vulnerable truth. This is very true. Please pay attention to this sentence. I read again so that it can go in. This is where we can truly recognize and experience suffering means in the midst of life and society in this world, in existence. And it is only amidst suffering that we can realize the vulnerable truth. Do you know why? Because this vulnerable truth, under the three turning, the Buddha say it very clearly, especially the first noble truth. He said, there is this first noble truth of dukkha that explains clearly to living beings the eight realities of life and existence that can condition suffering. So after he proclaimed this is the first turning of the first noble truth, then under the second turning, the Buddha said, this noble truth of dukkha, the eight condition, the eight reality of life and existence, is to be understood. This second turning is very important. Is to be understood. Dukkha is to be understood. Means the eight reality, you have to confront them. That's why without confronting suffering, you can never experience the beauty of this noble truth. So this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. How can you understand it? You have to confront it, go through it, experience it, and then only you understand. Even this line, during my early days of cultivation, I find it so beautiful. I confronted the eight reality. Then I see the beauty in this Dhamma understanding. Without the Dhamma, it's not easy to confront. Suffering will be the end result. So when the Buddha say, this noble truth of dukkha is to be experienced or to be understood, then you tell yourself the next time when you are sick, or when you have problem, or when you are confronting this reality, you tell yourself, this is a blessing in disguise. Without this condition, I can never understand the second turning of the first noble truth. That's why I have to confront this noble truth, face it, understand it, then go beyond it. So after you have developed the understanding of this first noble truth, then the third turning of the first noble truth shine forth the meaning. The Buddha said under the third turning, this noble truth of dukkha has already been understood. So second turning is you have to understand it, is to be understood. So you need to inquire, contemplate and reflect. Why did the Buddha say this? Why must I understand suffering? Because if you don't understand suffering, the danger is you suffer without knowing that this is suffering. This is the first noble truth reality. That is the danger of delusion, ignorance. So when you go through it, you experience it, then you know what suffering is, then at least you are not deluded. Whenever you confront this reality, you are already prepared for it. You understand that this will lead to craving, born of sakayaditi, attachment that conditions suffering and misery. So you have to develop the straightening of your view, wisdom, to liberate and free. Then the next question is, Why did the Buddha say this? Now I understand. Because if I don't go through, I don't know that I am suffering while going through existence. Means you suffer without knowing that that is suffering. Yeah. So I now understand why the Buddha want me to understand that this noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. So after I have understood it, then I move on to the third turning. How can I proclaim that I have already understood this noble truth of dukkha, the first noble truth? Means you must understand the three turning. Means you must know what suffering is. The cause behind is arising. Then straighten your view and develop the ability to cease it, that this suffering can be ceased. You can realize the enlightenment in the here and the now without having to die first. Means suffering may not be enlightenment in the here and the now. Nirvana can be realized. So this third noble truth understanding is very important. Then you must also know how to cultivate it and develop it. So the fourth noble truth is where the noble eightfold path is. You cultivate this noble eightfold path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Not until you have gone through all this four noble truth, you cannot proclaim the third turning, that this noble truth of dukkha has already been understood. So that is the beauty of the three turnings. So this part is not in the sharing in the book, but I have to explain it so that you all can understand. This is combining Theravada with the Mahayana. Yeah. So when you combine the two, it become more complete. Yeah. And the understanding is deeper. Okay, we go back to the notes. Oh, just nice. We are going to finish. By coming to the human realm to engage in spiritual practice and attain Buddhahood, the Buddha shows us that this is the training ground for attaining perfect enlightenment. Therefore, the Buddha Dharma is inseparable from the human realm. And all teachings expounded by the Buddha can be applied to life in this existential world. So this is very true. Okay, we will end here. Then we will have our second session, which is meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you may have.
Bratio, you know, did you follow the Swiss Canal, the big ship that blocked the Swiss? Bratio, what a coincidence, you know, that the big ship blocked and then the America wanted to go over and stop one of the treaty with Iran one, no?
Oh, okay.
I feel the world really so coincident, like such a thing happened, no?
So what is your question? Just how you wanted to ask something.
I asked about sometimes, like, you know, in this world, sometimes, yeah, you know, like cause and effect like that, you know? So, really cannot.
You can see them, yeah. You can see them happening, yeah.
Yes. That, yeah. Really.
Boleh?
Oh, yeah. Brother Theo.
Yeah, you have been nominated.
Good evening.
Congratulations. Yeah, good evening.
Oh, kaya namitas. Helen, thank you. I don't know what to ask.
You can have three options. Report meditation, or ask questions, or share whatever Dhamma in daily life.
The sentence strike me just now is when Brother Teo say, if your daily, daily life is the playground for us to cultivate.
Yeah. It's a training ground for Bodhisattva. Yes.
So if we don't see this, means your cultivation is not up to the mark.
Yes.
This sentence is, I captured this sentence just now.
Yeah, very important. Because in every moment of your life, your existence, there is Dhamma, means you have the training ground open for you. Because every moment is actually Dhamma. Dhamma is truth, the reality. So every moment you have to confront the truth, the reality. But most people have problem with living life. They are too caught up in life. So they become heedless. They created a lot of unnecessary emotion, fear, suffering, misery, and problem. So when they are entangled in this manner, they cannot live life. They cannot cultivate. They don't know what is going on. So for us, as Dhamma practitioners, then, we are more fortunate. Isn't it? Okay, Pauline, you, that's it.
Of course, Brother Teo, I am not up to mark. I only realize nowadays sometimes, of course, it's still on the thought basis, like sometimes in working or with friends, argue certain things. Sometimes or they talk about somebody, something like kepo one, then they say, what. Then I sometimes reply them, mo le he la, you know. I say something like that lah. Mo lehi lah, you know. But
okay.
I find that like, yeah, really it's kepo, you know.
Oh, okay. So maybe that is the way you are now. That's why you answer it that way.
Yeah, sometimes I find that all this thing is like yao da kui lah. I sometimes will say yao da kui.
You are still not able to actually look at that reality. That reality, sometimes if your colleague complains, has problem, that is typical of a heedless person who don't have the Dhamma, who don't understand. That's why they complain a lot. So next time I teach you, you're silent, listen, observe her or him, then the Dhamma will flow out. When you understand yourself, you understand others. Because your own cultivation is very important. When you cannot see your own delusion, heedless thinking, your own attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, then you cannot understand what happened to others. So that aspect, I think you need to work on it, Julian.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Brother, I still see a lot of time in the office working. I'm still very rigid, you know.
Yeah, so that is the reason why I say you have to work on it. You're still rigid means you don't see yourself. When you cannot see what is happening to yourself, that delusion, that heedlessness, that wrong thought, that condition, your suffering and misery, then you cannot understand what happened to others.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I say work on that. Be more mindful, contemplate more, reflect more. Then straighten your view. It's only after you yourself have no more problem, then you can help others. Then you can see and understand why others are caught in that manner. Just like before you have the Dhamma, before you have the understanding.
I actually see very much lah, very rigid. Sometimes also, I bite on certain thing, you know, I like really and my pang, you know.
Yeah, because this is the habitual tendency. You haven't rooted out. You haven't stabilized understanding. It's not easy. This, what you are going through is normal because you didn't have that strong cultivation background. Your mindfulness is lacking. You may have some knowledge and those things, but you must reflect more, contemplate more, and develop the ability to apply the teaching. First, apply it to solve your own problem first.
Brother, talking about contemplation, I always contemplate. I always don't know where to start.
Ayo, it's very easy. I already explained to you before. You see, like the first number two, For the first number two, you listen, when you want to speak, we on for you again. I have to mute you because there's a distortion there, echo, You listen, like the first number two, the eight reality. The Buddha said, this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. So the inquiry is what? Why did the Buddha say that? Do you understand? Then when you go through life, attachment is the cause of suffering. Why did the Buddha say that? The five aggregates of form and mind. What is this five aggregate? There are so many aspects of the teaching that you can inquire. Then you go into it one by one. Which means you have not been attentive when you listen to all this sharing. When you are attentive, you pick up all these things, then you go and try and apply it. Then you become different. That's why all those who are serious, like Alicia, they really listen and they apply. For you, I think because you are more happy-go-lucky type, more playful type, you always like it's a joke. You like the Dhamma, but you are not very attentive. You have not developed the strong faith to go all out to cultivate. You have to develop that strong tenacity to really go and listen attentively, then write down the important one, then from there develop the contemplation, the reflection. The inquiry will come. Like I say, why did the Buddha say that? All the example that I have given you, the five aggregates of grasping. So what are these five aggregates? Then when you understand, you try out. First aggregate, the physical body. If I attach, cling, and grasp, does it cause me suffering? Find out. And then the understanding will become more stable, more clear to you. Then the other thing is not only our physical form, external form. If I attach to what I see, what I hear, what I smell, what I tactile feel and think, do I suffer? You definitely suffer. Understand? What you see, you will react. Like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. We have attachment to many things. To our loved one. We like our loved one, our close relative, friends and all those things. But we hate our enemy. We hate our colleague whom we don't like. All these are your discrimination, your biased character, your views, your opinion, your conditioning. So see all this. Then you will come to the understanding, why did I have such preference, views, opinion, and conditioning? And how does it affect me as a human being? Then you will start to understand the teaching of the Buddha. It is through our attachment, craving. We cling on to duality, like and dislike. Born of our views, opinion, and conditioning. Then you start to look at it clearly, acting according to memory, which are all of our views, opinion, and conditioning is not acting at all. Where these are wrong way to act. Where this is not wisdom. These are all the views, opinion, and habitual tendency, conditioning, belief system. All this you have to inquire, reflect. Then look at it clearly. Can follow or not? I will unmute you. Wait, my daughter.
Brother, I can understand.
Can,
So you have to slowly do it, be more serious, more attentive. My daughter want to help you.
Okay. Yeah. Hello. I thought my experience might be a good reference for this topic, because I observe that whenever I am rigid, because I think I also observe that sometimes I very adamant about how things should be done, or I become unhappy of how things turn out. Then I notice the reason I am agitated or I am disappointed or unhappy with the situation is normally because I have an ideal, an expectation. I feel it's a basic minimum
standard
that everyone should have understood, and didn't meet. So that is, then I realized, hey, it's something like when you compare to people who are better off, then you always feel unhappy. When you compare, you say, when you think about it could have been worse, then you naturally won't complain. So I noticed when I am rigid, right, I am actually comparing to how things should be in my mind against the reality that happened. Then I cannot accept that the reality is not as perfect as what I thought in my mind that should have happened. Is it so easy to happen? Why people cannot follow? And I become very unhappy because of that. So I realized that one is actually attachment to my opinion, my bias, my expectation. That what I say is the bare minimum requirement, basic decency of a human being. I go and create that conception. So when I think back, actually, this is something that we have accumulated, and actually, it can be changed. How we look at things can actually be easily changed. It's how we have created the habit program, our mind to think that way. And if we make, if we really observe how we react, then we actually know. Before we get there, we actually know how to turn back and reprogram.
We will straighten our view to accept people the way they are.
Another point that I link to is sometimes now when I start to look at it, this helped me understand the dwelling and the mark, the six patriarchs. Because
six patriarchs,
I noticed that before we form marks, we dwell on the topic.
When
we dwell on the topic, right, when we create a mark, that is when it, for example, in the office, right, when we dwell on the work scenarios, then we start to create a mark what a boss should be, what a customer should be, what a lady should behave like, what a man should behave like. So we create all these basic decency standards. We create all these marks, then the thoughts start to come. So when you start to have a lot of thoughts like, oh, that lady is not reasonable, or that boss doesn't behave like a boss. These are all the thoughts that arise from the marks that we create because we started dwelling on the topic without observing, like, reality can be anything. Reality is open-ended. Anything can happen. Miraculous thing can happen. Horrible thing can happen. It's all part of reality, part of life. But we start to dwell, then we create category, we create all the marks, then we start to have a lot of our own thoughts, our own expectations. So that's why the six patriarch concept become very clear. No thought, no mark, no dwelling. Then you just live life Sun Kei Ji, you know, and Kui Sera Sera. Whatever happened will happen. Then becomes very easy to go through life. I hope this helps.
Thank you so much. Pauline, pay some attention. This is very useful. What my daughter mentioned is very useful. You see, the six patriarch teaching is so beautiful, is that there is mark. When you have mark of a self and others, this is precisely what my daughter, the example, fit in. When you think you exist, you become rigid, like what you say, ngang keng. You ngao chim tong. So there is rigidity. That's why I always say, wherever there is rigidity, there is no Dhamma. Dhamma is about accord and flow. The world is the world. People are just the way they are. So when you have that understanding, you become different. You can listen and you can accept the reality. So the mark of a cell means we generate this ego, this views, this personality, like my daughter just now mentioned, the minimum standards and all those things. This come from the mark of a cell who think that this should be the way to live life. This is the minimum lowest standard where all humanity should be able to use and apply. Then it becomes a situation or a problem. Then the mark of others, the boss should be like that. Huh? The colleague should be like that. They shouldn't do this, they shouldn't do that. Who say all these things? It's the thought, the egoic mind that created the mark. And all this are mark where you hold on to all this. You think they are real, you think they exist. So humanity, when it comes to relationship, is about noble eightfold path. You need to communicate, you need to live life. Existence is one thing, Dhamma is another thing. So when you have the Dhamma, you look beyond mark. Then you see them as they are. You accept their reality. But there is a law of karma. You know all this. If you create this type of negativity, it leads to karma. That's why you have to apply Noble Eightfold Path to free from the mark. Noble Eightfold Path is the best meditation for you to free from the mark. Yeah, that one is non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. Yeah, it has right view. If you don't apply Noble Eightfold Path, the mark will keep on appearing. You will create all the mark. Then when there is mark, you will dwell. How you dwell? You give meaning. That thought come in, like my daughter say, after the mark created, the thought come in and dwell here, dwell there. Everything you hold on to, you dwell. So the mark of a cell, you have to realize that and relinquish it, free your mind. This form of mind is not real, not what we think. I have explained many times. So reflect, contemplate. It's only a vehicle and a tool. So use it to live life. But then this form of mind is subject to karma. We need to do our duty. We need to have right understanding, following Noble Eightfold. All these are the important understanding that you need to live life. Otherwise, you become very confused. That's why living beings become heedless, is because they don't have this understanding. And it's not easy to apply on this. You need to have very stable understanding of the cultivation and the teaching. Otherwise, you can't. Hmm. So, Pauline, you pay attention. Eh? What my daughter shared with you is very useful. It also helps others. Now you can come in. Huh?
I think, brother, that is why I always wanted a certain way that I expecting to progress in this manner, which the world doesn't operate or spin in that manner. So it's the wrong view.
Yeah, now you understand. That's why you have to see that you are holding on to your own views and opinions. That is the mark of a self. You are operating from the self. When you don't have a mark of a self, you operate as a Dhamma practitioner, a cultivator. So you apply Noble Eightfold Path, right view leading to right thought. Right? So Noble Eightfold Path is not rigid. Noble Eightfold Path never say you must be like that, you must be like that. Eh? Hold on to things. No, Noble Eightfold Path is right view to accept the reality. Everything has coming. He is the way he is. The world is the world. People are just the way they are. So they will have to face their own consequence. So that understanding is very important. So when you can accept them for what they are, or the world as the world, then you can be at peace first. Then you will not create the dwelling, understand? The thought will not come out and dwell and complain this, complain that, and talk about this and talk about that. So this is what Dhamma is all about. When you understand, you don't dwell. When you don't dwell, you become more peaceful, more quiet. Then you look at the way it manifests. You observe like what I teach you. When you have seen clearly, your own form and mind, how you get yourself into trouble and anger, and you have straightened your view and come on, then you can understand why that person is like that. Is they haven't come out. They are still caught in that phase. So you have to accept them for what they are. You don't go and comment about them. How can this guy talk like that? How can she behave like that? No more. We just smile and accept them for what they are. Then you'll find that it's of not much use because they are all in that category of heedlessness. Then you may just try to avoid the foolish or the heedless. Do you understand? You make the aspiration, but you don't know how to come out of it, and it becomes a problem. That's why we tend to mix around with kayanamitas, people who have the Dhamma. But it doesn't mean you cannot mix with people who don't have the Dhamma. There are some people who may not have the Dhamma, but they have basic decency about character and life. So these are people who are also useful because they are our training ground. Do you understand? Sometimes difficult people is our good training ground. We should thank them for providing us with the condition and opportunity to cultivate. So all this, you need to go into it. There's still a lot of work for you. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you, Sadhu, Brother Teo.
Yeah.
So what else you want to know?
I think I have to be very mindful in my office because that is a very good ground.
Yes, training ground. So now keep that word in your mind. Every time you can apply the Dhamma to a situation, that is your training ground. Otherwise, you will get yourself entangled like last time. So hopefully, from now onward.
Yeah, I know that I'm very rigid in working, but just don't know how to turn.
It's very easy. When you already know that that is what you are, so change. Straighten your view. Be more patient. Be more mindful and aware. Be silent and observe more. Don't simply react and talk. Then, like you say, that one is all no use. That one is heedless people's reply. You are not actually helping them. You are making them more confused. So if you really have the wisdom later on, the Dhamma, then you will know how to help them. You can tell them very simply, is it? If you react and get yourself involved, you become more and more unhappy, isn't it? That is not the way to solve problems. If you want to really solve that problem amicably, then you start to use what you have developed through understanding the teaching, the Dhamma. You say, we have to accept them for what they are. Accepting them doesn't mean you agree with what they do. And then you act with understanding, with wisdom, trying to mitigate whatever arise, trying to resolve things amicably so that nobody get angry. Means speak appropriately, speak kindly, harmoniously, don't get angry, don't become reactive, don't become rigid. So all these are helpful, useful. Then sometimes you have to let them understand. That's why the world is not what we think. It's not a perfect world, like my daughter goes through. Everyone is different. So we need to understand them in order to be at peace with them. Otherwise, there is no life. Every moment or so, you become miserable, afflicted. When people say something, you get angry. Then that is not life. Or when people say something, you worry. Everything also have problem. Then very difficult to be at peace. To be at peace is to have Dhamma, to have understanding, to accept the reality, to accept people for what they are, to accept the world as the world. Then manifests only when you have the ability to solve problem, resolve issue amicably, then you manifest. That is what Dhamma is all about. You can help, provided you have the understanding. Otherwise, try not to get yourself entangled or involved. When you are ready, you will know. So sometimes you can maybe start somewhere, but you yourself have to develop deeper understanding of Dhamma. If you're still so rigid, you cannot help. Like now, my doctor can help people is because she believes she has certain understanding that she has gone through in life. She has developed the understanding and come out of it. That's why now she can apply that understanding to help people. So you can also do it if you really seriously cultivate and develop this understanding. Okay, Colin?
Yeah.
Queenie, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Can, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good evening, Brother Teo, Mr. Teo, and Kalayamita. Thank you, Pulian, for nominating me. Actually, I have nothing much to share, but I'm trying to put a lot of efforts by joining the class every lesson as
much
as I can.
You have the faith. Yeah, you are very diligent. I saw you coming to my house to do the chanting. I know your faith very strong.
So I'm trying to listen to all the sharing and what you are teaching on the infinity.
Sutra of infinite meaning.
Sutra of infinite. And I tend to get a little bit more understanding about it now.
Yes.
And I find it not really that easy to understand, but I'm trying to make an effort to it.
Yeah, very good.
And and just now you were on the topic of the Noble Eightfold Path.
Noble Eightfold Path.
I listened to it very carefully.
Oh, sadhu.
Because this one was a subject always mentioned, even in the beginning of our classes, we also did that.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't stay in our mind very well.
Not many people can really teach and share.
Yeah, it's good to listen to this because the more we listen, we will tend to catch up more with it. And then we can look deeply more into it.
Yes.
And I hope I can improve much more slowly by listening to all this sharing. And I also found that there are many cultivators who have improved a lot lately. I'm very happy for their improvement. Some are so good.
You must remember, when you listen, you must reflect, contemplate, then inquire, and make sure you apply it. Applying it is the final important outcome. It's just like over Eightfold Path. I give you the example. How do we start cultivating Noble Eightfold Path? The Noble Eightfold Path is basically the path that leads to the end of all suffering. That is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. The first path factor is right view. So we have to start from there. Then once you understand right view with regards to law of karma, then the advice of the Buddha, how we come about, all those things, following my daughter's flowchart, everything is there. Actually, that flowchart helped you to save a lot of time on contemplation because all the answers are there. So this is very useful. Then from that flowchart, you start to understand how the advice of the Buddha come about. It's from the right view with regards to law of karma. So all the things are there. Then after that, from right view, you develop the right understanding to live life. So to live life, you need right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood. And all also in the notes. Understand? Everything is already there. So you save a lot of time. You go to that notes. That one will help. My daughter call it one of them. Mind map. Mind map, remember? In our website. My daughter says she will send to you again, Queenie.
Okay.
Send to my Kayamita better.
Thank you.
They will send to my Kayamita so that you all can use it. So now you understand already. You go to the mind map, actually save you a lot of contemplation. So for Polian also same, yeah. You go to the mind map. So from right view, all the things start. Then after that, second right view, Citta Niyama, law of mind, the dwelling, Patita, all there. Then after that, the third right view, law of truth, they are all there described. That mind map is very useful. It helps a lot. Sadhu to you, Queenie, for bringing up such a useful topic. Number 8 very important.
I think this is a very good aspect of the Dhamma.
Noble Eightfold Path.
It's the foundation for almost everything.
Yes, well, that is the cultivation. That is the meditation. So a lot of people don't know how to apply the Noble Eightfold Path. Then you have to learn. Even the four right effort is a very big topic. Then right thought is also a very big topic. We are from four right effort come the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, everything. They are all interconnected. Then later on, only mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Very good. Anything else, Queenie?
I'm still trying to improve my meditation.
You will remember, listen to my today sharing. Relax, maintain awareness.
You say relax body and mind.
The benefits of meditation will come. Once you are able to relax and maintain awareness, means you are just aware without thought. Without thought, there is no fear, no worry, no anxiety. There's only inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness, clarity, inner well-being. So you will experience all this. Then your mind becomes very quiet, very peaceful, very tranquil, very still. That is what meditation is all about. Then you like recuperate. Then you can rest very well. It improves your health, improve your mindfulness. Then it can let you understand a lot of things. So do it, do it. Listen to today's pre-meditation there. It will help you.
Thank you, Brother.
Okay, Sadhu, thank you.